the vaccine?
Morning.
Hi.
Checking out the filters on the Zoom thing. You can do that one too.
Yeah, it also puts captions.
Yeah.
I've decided I'm going to start
video filters on the Zoom settings thing. But
yeah, I've decided I'm going to start using album covers.
Might as well. This is my garden right now. So it's supposed to be 80 degrees today.
Yeah, what's it here? Let's see. It is 38 and raining. That's warm.
Well, it drops down into the 40s here at night, and then this week is supposed to be fairly warm. Today, like I said, it's supposed to get up to 80, and then it starts dropping again. Maybe rain next week, but they don't know yet.
Well, at least we're not in Texas paying $15,000 for electricity.
The recommendation that I saw for Texas people was to disconnect their credit card from automatic payments for...
Right, and not pay.
Well, yeah, but they said you have to disconnect that payment card because otherwise they'll keep on draining your account.
Right. The whole thing is bizarre.
Yep.
It's what you get for deregulation.
Mm-hmm. Well, that and they refuse to connect to the federal grids. They're right in between two of them, and either one of them would have, you know, giving them some electricity for now, but they also refuse to winterize.
Right. Well, that's the whole thing. The deregulation, it's not forcing them to do the right thing.
Yeah. So.
I'm tired. I was just about to take a nap and then I realized I had a meeting.
Well, I didn't get much sleep last night for, I don't know, just body pain all over. So. Well, where is everybody?
Yeah, I know.
Nobody's here from Texas. They're taking off for Washington's birthday.
A week later.
Well, no, today's his birthday.
Right, the actual birthday.
They move President's Day to connect to Lincoln.
And Martin Luther King is
that was last.
The middle of January.
Yeah. I don't know what's up next month, if anything, that's federal. I mean, Passover, I think, and Easter are there, but
yeah. You into the Terminator movies?
I liked the first one okay, and then it got a little weird.
No, I just watched yesterday. I watched the last one, which was came out a year ago.
I haven't seen that.
It's good action.
Well, Arnold was our governor. Actually, he didn't do all that bad, but.
No. He didn't do that bad as the Terminator either.
Yeah.
But they gave Linda Hamilton the line, "I'll be back." Hey, Frank. Muted.
I always forget. Yours are the only meetings I come into muted.
I don't understand that.
Am I the only one who comes in muted?
No, I don't know.
I have to first turn on connect computer audio, and then it still says mute for me.
Well, I don't know.
If we were doing this every day, I would learn, but apparently I'm too slow once a week.
Well, me too.
There's probably a configuration in the meeting setup that you can hit a button and we will come in without being muted.
I think it just says use computer audio or something.
Well, that I have to push that, but then I'm still muted when I come in.
Yeah, okay.
So it might be something in your settings to adjust.
Yeah. Allison's muted.
No, I'm unmuted. Well, my husband has a date for his knee replacement.
Woo!
May 18th, which means if Art in the Park goes on, I'll be able to do it, and then hopefully he'll be up and around before the middle of July, before State College. So, it's good dates. And I cleaned the back room today, and it was very dusty, and I'm very clogged up in my nose. I've been framing and getting ready. I got 6 more pictures to frame, and as soon as it warms up and I can walk, not on ice, I will move the van.
Get ice spikes for your shoes.
That's okay. It's going to be gone by Wednesday. It's supposed to be 60 on Wednesday.
Oh. We're getting huge snowflakes here in New Jersey at the moment.
We had some ice, but I think it turned to rain, and it looks like the snow is melting. Thank God. I've had enough.
Well, we're going to have at least one more snowstorm here next week, or late this week. I know it was a very mild January, and February has not been.
I don't mind the snow, it's the ice. I mean, it was like you could walk on top of it. The cats weren't making any footprints, you know, it was crazy. Oh.
Well, we're just chatty as hell today.
Did you say something?
I said we're as chatty as hell.
Yes.
There might not be anybody else. It's almost 5 after.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully they're okay and not stuck in a snowstorm or
right. Or they have no electricity in Texas.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awful.
I thought it was coming back on. I had the impression that the worst was over.
Yeah, I wonder if they're going to cut off the people that can't pay their bill.
I think that would be very, very foolish on the part of the utilities. They'll get the hell suit out of them, and the state will probably come down on them like a ton of bricks.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't be surprised if the Biden Justice Department didn't chime in as well.
They were supposed to have some sort of insurance on things, too, that if it got above a certain level, then the insurance would kick in to pay. But I didn't really understand that.
Yeah, I saw today a guy who got a $17,000 bill. I'd be moving out of Texas.
It's only a small... a small number of Texans is a large number of people, but a relatively small percentage of Texans were on these lower electricity plans that they were going to pay the wholesale price. And when the wholesale price went crazy, they were in deep trouble. So
yeah, they pay,
sort of,
it's like Uber. You pay for, there's more people using Uber, the price goes up.
Yeah, yeah. Supply and demand.
Yes. Right.
But actually that insurance idea would make all sorts of sense. But then that insurance idea would raise the average day-to-day price. So if you're being that cheap, maybe you're not going to pay for the insurance and then you're in trouble. You know, if those people had the choice of an insurance plan and turned it down, then their legal position wouldn't be as good.
Yeah.
All the insurance company has to do is declare bankruptcy, too.
Yeah.
And then everybody's out in the cold, so to speak.
I will end up like in Florida. I was surprised when we moved to Florida that we had a regular damage deductible and a hurricane deductible. Hurricane deductible was $5,000. Yeah. So when you're sitting in the safe room and hearing the wind blow, you're grateful that it's a tornado.
Well, we have earthquake insurance here.
Oh.
And since we're on a hill, we don't need to get the flood insurance. So.
You have fire insurance?
We had earthquake insurance. Yeah. Well, we didn't get any damage from the earthquake, but we had an earthquake here, which was very surprising when we first moved here.
Well, there was one, I guess, geographically close that was 7.6, so that's
pretty big.
Yes.
Yeah.
So.
We only had a 5.9, but then the nuclear power plant is only rated for a 6.
Ours has been shut down in theory, our power plant, nuclear power plant. That's the one that sort of checked out when that transformer in Arizona went down a few years back and blacked out all of Southern California and Northern Mexico.
Mm. No, apparently I was happy to hear ours shut down properly during the earthquake.
Well, this wasn't.
Is that the one that damaged the Washington Monument, Allison?
Yes.
I was on a second floor office with my computers, and all of a sudden the racks, the book, were going like this. I was like, what the hell? Yeah, that was felt way, way, way up here.
Yeah, we were 3 miles from the epicenter. I was outside and I didn't know what it was until someone called me. I thought, yeah, we're probably about a mile and a half from the train tracks. And I thought a train had derailed or something like that because it just made this. First, I thought it was an accident, somebody hit somebody out on the road. And then it sounded like, okay, there's a boxcar going to come barreling through the woods at me any minute now. And But one of the advantages of a manufactured home is that they're built sturdier because they have to go out on the highway. So we had some pictures fall off the wall and that was it. People with brick had a lot of damage. We had to rebuild the high school. It was a mess.
Well, they're going through and either tearing down and rebuilding various structures here to meet new earthquake authority code. They just ripped down a stadium that had been up for, I don't know, 30, 40 years and redoing that whole thing. And Kaiser Hospital, they built a new hospital already and they're using the old hospital just as offices, but that one may have to come down depending on whether it meets code for office building type of thing. And they did the same thing up Hayward and San Leandro, where my husband was. He started out at the Hayward Hospital and his office was down in the basement and he brought in water and Maurice, so and his co-workers were going, "What do you got that for?" I said, "You better bring some in if you know the building shakes and collapses. You know, we're not going to have any way to get out for a few days." And they said, "Oh, I'll come and get yours."
I had to do a business trip to San Francisco a long time ago, and I was like really debated on the hotel room. Do I want the bottom floor so I get out, or do I want the top floor so I don't get crushed?
Well, the top floor is more likely to go like that. So, like Frank said, you know, you watch your dresser do a dance. But the basement would have been safe, you know, from getting collapsed on. But, you know, you need food and water for a few days until they can take you out. But they tore that one down and transferred to the San Leandro one until January. And then he retired. They do whatever they want. Not his problem anymore. Well, maybe they're all out at the art fair.
Yeah. I heard that Pennsylvania is being really, really strict, so they're worrying that State College might not go on.
Oh.
Of course, that's not till July, so.
Well.
The hospitalization rate is way down. The infection rate is down. The vaccines are ramping up. July, I would think you've got a good shot.
Yeah, I hope so.
Well,
then I have to worry about Cliff being able to take care of himself, and cleaning the kitty litter is the big deal. He can't get down on his knees.
Well, I don't know if it was Biden or Fauci or somebody said they expected to have enough vaccines distributed by the end of July that anybody who was willing to get one could have one by then. Or maybe both.
Yeah.
So I have a...
Yeah, I noticed here that the daily averages have dropped a great deal.
Yeah. Well, we... two of our vaccine super centers or whatever have been closed down because we couldn't get shipments in that were supposed to be there. But I have a appointment for March 2nd for my first dose of whichever one they get in at that time.
My second is March 3rd, so March 17th I can go get my toenails done and my hair cut. And my eye appointment, I remember calling, I guess it was last March, the end of March, saying, I don't think I should come, I have asthma.
Oh, yeah. Well, I found out my sister had had a case of COVID. My sister, and she's a breast cancer survivor, so. Hopefully she doesn't have any of the, what they call long COVID stuff. She probably
I'm waiting for Ron to magically appear.
Oh, as far as I go. Lots in the swamp, that's it. How y'all doing?
Things are looking up.
They are.
Oh. Yep. We actually got that money back on our taxes this year. I was shocked.
What money?
Good money. Big money back on our taxes. Yeah.
Well, we took a hit because of all the cash out and stuff my husband had at the, you know, end of his employment.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, mine. I didn't realize they didn't take our first year of me retired. I didn't realize they didn't take taxes out of Social Security unless you asked them to. And they didn't take taxes out of my retirement pay, which is very small, but. And I also had a loan outstanding, which they paid off. I mean, it was, I think we paid $6,000 for 2018 taxes.
Well, part of the problem too is that they're basing certain things on his gross income from 2019, and 2020 was lower. So, you know, we owe on Medicare for 2019 levels of stuff, which is about $150 more than if you're, you know, a lower income level. And that affects mine too. So, since we file joint.
So what do y'all think is going to be happening this year in the show season?
We were just talking about that. That the daily average has dropped a great deal. I think things are looking promising. I'm not quite ready yet to, well, I'm getting ready for May. I don't think it's going to happen unless some major changes happen, but I'm going to be ready.
Yeah, because I see what just happened with Columbus canceling, which was kind of, with the shows that have been done, changing the footprint of the shows, less artists, spacing out the booths more, they can make it work in terms of at least getting the events permitted and happening. Yes, I think artists are a little disappointed sometimes with the results that they're getting, although a lot of them are just happy to be doing shows. But then to be looking down the road now and seeing a show the size of Columbus cancel, wondering what effect that's going to have on Summer Fair and Worthington and other shows in the Midwest. It's a, what do you guys think is going to,
Columbus had all the musical acts too, so they've got, you know, a lot of, and I did it, what was it, 2018 I did it, and the weather was so bad, they didn't have any of the musical acts on, and it was okay, but considering the booth fee and everything, and to get to Columbus, I had already, was on the wait list for 2021, and I decided, no, I'm not going to do it, just because it's, I don't want to take any major risks this year, and that one would have been a risk.
Well, some states are having problems rolling out the vaccine now.
That's
ours,
true.
Our second dosage was postponed for 2 weeks.
Okay.
Oh, that's right. We're in Pennsylvania.
Because of transportation issues. Yeah, we have super centers set up, but right now they're closed because we couldn't get shipments in because of the snowstorms in the rest of the country.
Right.
I mean, my picture today is from my yard a couple of days ago.
Oh. Do you think they're going to make up for that lost time?
They're rescheduling appointments.
Well, there's a range, and they're scheduling at the end of that range, and if they get in the vaccine sooner, they'll call us.
But you think that's going to, that these are going to be some of the big factors that affect shows in May and June, starting into the heart of the show?
Well, yeah, the percentage of people that have been vaccinated is going to be a big factor.
Yeah,
for sure.
But again, I'm kind of curious what you guys think, because if shows have, like in September, Amy Amender pulled off some up in Chicago, and Howard pulled off the Alexandria, and then down in Florida in the last couple of months, Howard and Patty Narosny and some others have been, and Artie Graub got pulled off. They actually happened. So why is
Florida has been very, very lax.
Mm-hmm. You think that's kind of it?
Yeah.
You think the northern
states are
more concerned about what's going to happen, like Three Rivers or Columbus or any of those shows?
I don't even know. Has Three Rivers announced yet?
I haven't heard a word from Three Rivers.
Because normally their jury deadline is in February.
Yeah. Long's Park is the only one that I've been getting notices from. But yeah, you're right. Three Rivers is quiet. A lot of the shows that are rolling artists over, well, if you rolled over, but the shows aren't going to happen.
I have a survey from the Cultural Trust. They run Three Rivers.
Yeah. What'd they say?
But I haven't even opened the survey.
Okay.
It's not about the art shows. They want to know if they should go back to live music. They don't, you know, the art show is so far down on their list of priorities. It's bizarre. Wow.
So you guys think there's going to be a show season this year for you?
I think there's going to be an Alexandria. I don't know how they managed to do all the booth spacing, because I don't know if they accepted a lower number of people. I declined because of my asthma, and I just wasn't ready to go out in public. So I don't know if I'll get in this year. I mean, are they going to accept fewer people just in case and be able to spread out? Because they've got a whole new location. But I'm hoping to do it. It's usually my best show.
You as artists, all of you, have reservations about going to do art shows because of the COVID environment? Or are you okay if they space the booths out and everybody has to wear masks and there's stations all over for sanitizers? Is that enough to make you comfortable doing the shows?
I'm comfortable because I'll have a vaccine by then. That's the only reason. I said I'm not going out until there's a vaccine, until I have a vaccine. Because, you know, my asthma is well controlled 99% of the time. But I actually got hit with an asthma attack my last show in October of 2019, and had to get people around me to help me break down, and almost stopped by the emergency room on the way home. So it's not something I want to mess with.
Now, what about you, Katie and Frank? Are you guys, how comfortable do you guys?
I'm in California, Southern California, and my only big show is Comic-Con. I'm not a vendor though. Enter the art show, which is sort of done like a gallery. You kind of set up your stuff, and then 5 days later, you pull down whatever wasn't sold. So that's a bit different.
Is that still scheduled to go on?
It's still scheduled, but they have to wait until the state or the county or somebody, you know, government in charge says whether or not it can happen. Usually they have about 130,000 attendees. Not all of them go to the art show, but there's attendees in the main convention center. Plus, there's been a street fair going on in conjunction with it, and the local baseball stadium is converted into something else for that period. Comic-Con doesn't run the thing in the baseball stadium nor the street fair. Those are done by the city. But
given COVID, do you yeah. think that 130,000 people in attendance is even going to be allowed?
I don't know. They yeah. might say, well, you can have it, but you need to cut it to 70,000. Well, you know, there's a big scramble to get those 130,000 tickets. They've set it up so you can't scalp them, but that was happening before they did whatever they had to do to prevent that.
Okay. What about you, Frank? Are you?
Well, I go to art shows basically to network. And it hasn't been hugely productive for me. I'm a website designer, and most of my clients are artists. And so it hasn't been that productive an activity the last few years, so mostly it's been fun. When I've got both vaccinations, I will certainly be going to any art fairs that I find enjoyable that are within a reasonable distance.
Have you gone to any in the last 6 or 8 months?
I have not been to an art fair in the last 12 months.
Wow, okay. What about you, Larry?
The only shows I go to and walk are the Pittsburgh shows. But I am getting work. It started in January.
So the artists are starting to contact you to take pictures of their work?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, and I've been getting work converting simple sites into stores.
Good.
And
is that because you think artists are seeing the virtual world either being a necessity or a viable reality for them, in addition, the alternate to art shows?
Well, I don't think that I'm going to get the same level of interest over the next 6 months as I did over the last 12. But when people realized there weren't going to be any shows last year, they were saying, how on earth do I sell? And the online, having their own online store made sense to them. And I think that a significant number will continue to be switching over to that, because if you're using Weebly or Squarespace, you can have, you know, your entire portfolio online without any great expense, and you just have a PayPal or a Square account, and you have a store. So it's a different, you know, there are some problems in terms of you have to have shipping issues, and if somebody buys something and they don't like it, what do you do? But it's clearly viable, and it's clearly worked for a lot of people. And so it's sort of silly not to, you know, when it costs $100 a month to have a store and you weren't sure what kind of traffic you were going to get, that was different, but it's so much easier and cheaper now than it was. If you're going to have a website, it doesn't cost you that much. You know, the cheapest website's $10 a month. Yeah. $25 a month gets you, you know, as many items in the store as you want.
Do you offer the services to help them promote their website?
My job, as I see it, is to help them with everything related to the website, including messaging, focus, comprehension. I'm not an ad agency, so I'm not going to help them advertise the site. I will help them do the basics of SEO. I will tell them the basics about Facebook ads and Google ads. And then if they want help with those things, I will try to find them appropriate services to help them with that. Excuse me. I'll be right back.
Yeah, because I'd be curious to know how, if you guys had, what experiences you had with the virtual art shows.
Well, last year, Comic-Con, for whatever reason, decided the art show was going to be hosted on Tumblr, which was a very poor platform for anybody who wanted to sell something, unless they already had a following. And this was not the art show's decision to put it there. That was someone up in the you know, executive committee that decided to. It was free to use, but, you know, nobody uses Tumblr if they're beyond teenage. They said the main demographic there is low-income young women.
Oh, great.
Yeah. So, you know, is it $5? Okay, maybe. But
I think it was hard to use. After, I think, 7 virtual shows so far, I have made $735.
Whoa, you rock.
Yeah, right.
I was one of the
most any artist I know.
That was pretty much 2 shows at the beginning. I have not sold anything on Eventme at all.
So, but now since Eventme doesn't do promotion, from what I understand, it's up to the promoters that use Eventme. Eventme is the platform that they decide to use. So would you say that that's an issue of the promoters not knowing how to promote in the virtual world to bring people to the event sites?
Like it's got to be the promoters, because basically I'm not going to advertise something that's going to take people off of my website and go to another website where I have to pay a commission. Now, I will, you know, note that they're going on in my email newsletter, but basically I'm not going to do a lot of promoting for the promoter. If they, you know, Eventme does, you know, they should be taking in the money to be advertising.
So one of my clients has been running as an art dealer, a print fair in Manhattan for several years, and another one in D.C., and he took it online last year and did well enough to do the West Coast online print fair, which appealed to the audience of 3 shows on the West Coast. And that ran in the beginning of February. And they think that the gross revenue for the show, since they were sending all the sales were on the dealer's sites, not on their site, they didn't have a shopping cart, but they know of at least $350,000 worth of product that was sold.
Wow.
So now these are people selling very expensive prints and photographs, you know, high-end dealers with advertising budgets.
And they have a clientele then that's used to coming to their site to look for it?
Yeah, well, there were something on the order of 50 dealers from around, some of them were from other countries. And they were all promoting the show to their, a significant number of them were promoting the shows to their own lists so that the people would come to the show would see their, from that would see other people's stuff, and the people from other people's lists would see their stuff. So they, the promoters were not happy with the people who took Allison's point of view. They felt that, you know, they had an obligation to promote the show because other attendees were promoting the show, and everybody who promoted was benefiting everybody else.
Okay.
And I've talked to them about, wouldn't it make sense to put a shopping cart into the show so that people would stay on their site when they were purchasing?
Amen. Yes.
And their concern was they couldn't control the shipping, and you know, with there's 2 of them, if the ongoing shows that they intend to continue generate enough money that they can hire some staff and pay some insurance bills that they don't have to pay when they're not, don't have the cart, then they will be interested in doing that, because they do see that it's a benefit to the show, definitely a benefit to the customers, to have one shopping cart as opposed to be bouncing from one website to another to buy.
Yeah.
But they're just afraid of the complexities and the management issues and the legal liabilities.
They don't think they can set up the site to be able to address the issues that you just raised about shipping, et cetera, that where you could say go to see 3 different people offering art and be able to drop it into your shopping cart, that the site couldn't handle logistically shipping for each of those items?
Well, the previous two shows were run on Shopify, and Shopify is not set up to allow that.
Okay.
You know, that I mean, they could take the responsibility of selling the thing and shipping it, but they would have to depend on the dealer to ship. And that was a risk they did not want to take. You know, what happens if something's damaged and there's a dispute? They did not want to be in the middle of that.
That's a constant issue with all the virtual shows.
Yes. Now, there is a possibility of doing what Amazon does, which is you act as a shopping cart, but the shipping costs, the tax issues are actually associated with the vendor, you know, because Amazon is putting other people's stores into their store. It's the same database, but when you're shopping, you're not sure who you're shopping from sometimes. There are multi-vendor shopping carts available. And one of the things that I will be doing for these people is investigating the multi-vendor carts, so that if they could have, you know, the shopping cart function is theirs, but the checkout issues and the shipping issues are going to be, you know, you have multiple vendors, you have multiple shipping choices, someone associated with every vendor and whatever insurance issues associated with every vendor and so on. It will be quite complicated to set up, and it will be quite complicated to administer, but it could solve the problem.
Yeah, because I would vote to support what you're doing, because I think that's the positive thing that something like Eventme offered was the ability to shop from multiple vendors, multiple artists at the same
time.
Put it in, didn't have to be like go anywhere else. You could stay there and you could buy paintings over here, you could buy ceramics over here, and it'd be in one cart. And I think on Eventme, each vendor just set up their own shipping policy. So I think that was defined on Eventme. But that ability is powerful to be able to say, our people don't need to leave this site. They can buy from multiple vendors. So if you can convince them of that, Frank, I think you're going to.
Well, they definitely see the pros, and they definitely see the cons. And they did not think in terms of a multi-vendor shopping cart. And the computer programmer, the open cart expert who is helping us set this up, he is very leery about dealing with software from vendors he's never dealt with before. And so he's reluctant to participate in installing something like that. So it's going to be a very interesting project. It will take weeks to get it figured out if we do it for the next show. My guess is that the next show will run the same way the previous one did. We're changing platforms from Shopify to OpenCart because we set up OpenCart for everybody to upload their stuff, because the first round they had used some online form builder that didn't give them enough control over what data could be put in. So people were putting pound signs in for English prices and euro signs and dollar signs in, and they only wanted dollar pricing. And so they spent hours and hours cleaning up things that people put in because they couldn't control the inputs. So in OpenCart, we could control the inputs. If it's a price field, you can only put a number in. You can't put in a currency symbol. And so everybody's on notice that it's dollars. And if you want to price in dollars something that costs more in euro, you know, that should be in euros, you better make the price adjustment yourself, because it's going to be priced in dollars on the website.
Yeah.
I don't think that Eventme is going to be very valuable when they start running it as an adjunct to a physical show.
Well, that's an interesting question to me, is if we're training the public to say, we're trying to create a virtual world of art selling that is viable. If that can work, then do you think it's going to be a good supplement to art shows? Because, for example, depending on how they structure Eventney, if you only can be in Eventney if you're actually in the show, or if the show doesn't happen, you know, that's going to be an interesting thing to do, because right now you can be in a show in Eventney that's not physically happening. So,
right.
And is there going to be any advantage to if you're in the Cherry Creek and you're in the virtual show and in the physical show, is there an advantage to that? But if the virtual world can work, that opens up a lot of opportunities for artists. But there's a lot of hurdles, as you're describing, that the virtual world has to get over. And then
it also, Ron, you're a photographer as well, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. I know you. It's easy to put up photography into Eventney. It's not so easy to put up something, you know, one of a kind 3D items that you have to photograph and get correct. It's like making 1,000 Zapplication shots that, and then you have to keep it up to date. And, you know, something sells at a show, now it can't sell on Eventney. But that gets really, really messy. For a photographer, it's, you know, I put my pictures up there and pay my $20 to $50 and they're there. And I don't, I do not have any of my framed items out there because I don't want to ship them framed. And plus, if it's, you know, during a show, then I don't have to worry about selling something off the wall that somebody wants to come pick up at the show. On Eventney.
But I think Eventney has been working a lot. I think one of the strengths of Eventney is that they've been willing to listen to artists and promoters. And if they have issues, they're willing to work. Like, for example, if you had, say, a piece of sculpture or a piece of handmade furniture and you wanted to include multiple images of it, you can. You know, so they're getting over that hurdle of one image per product to be able to say, yeah, I can have seven. You know, Larry Berman can take seven different shots of this product that I can show on Eventney to really showcase that piece better than they can on Zap, or better that they, unless like Frank, when he designs the websites, can also offer that option for artists.
But the problem is the people who are the artists who are not photography savvy are going to have a hard time getting those pictures, getting them up online at Eventney or any website, you know, at least with a website that is not connected with the show, then you put up certain things. I don't know. I just know that it's much harder for somebody who, say, jewelry or even something larger that's harder to photograph.
The one of the things about the show that happened, you know, the dealer show was that these are dealers of longstanding reputation who the buyers are who they are, and they have some trust that what they're selling is what they're representing. Mm-hmm. In an art show, in a physical art show, you see the object, you can relate to the object, you can talk to the artist, you make a purchase. There's a risk on an online show that the photograph isn't a good representation. What do you do if you get it and you don't like it? You know, it's a much harder thing. And the quality of the photography is gonna matter. The cheaper the object, the harder it is to manage an online thing. You know, if you're selling things that cost $1,000 and you investing $100 in photography, might be a better deal than spending the money on gas and insurance to take it somewhere. But you're dealing with things that are inexpensive. The photography issues, you either have to become a really good photographer or you're going to spend, you know, Larry's going to make all the money.
I agree with you that I think it's a discussion that's kind of going on in the artist community, because there's some artists that think, oh, buying online is the new way to do art. And there's a lot of us, I think, that are contesting that and saying, no, it's not. Because just as you described, Frank, there's no substitute for somebody walking into your booth, standing in front of your piece of art, picking up that piece of glass or that piece of jewelry, trying it on. There's no substitute for that.
Right.
And that is going to become an issue for for all of us as to if they buy online, like companies like Amazon and eBay and all that, they have return policies. You know, it's no big deal to them. For us, yeah, somebody buys $1,000 piece of art, it's going to be challenging whether you're going to want to return it or not, and pay for the return of it, and hope that they will package it up well enough to be able to return it without getting damaged.
Yeah. See, the issue is the small person competing with Amazon. Amazon, if there's something wrong with your order and it's under a certain price, they just tell you to throw it away.
Really?
Yep.
Wow.
I've had that happen.
And we can't afford that.
No. But does that not mean that taking like Frank's approach is the kind of concept that we need then to address this and say, okay, how can we make this work? Because what we're selling is not what Amazon is selling. We're not selling so much. Yes, it's product. It's a piece of jewelry. It's a photograph. It's a painting. But these are all handmade by the artist. It's a different, is it not different enough that we can come up with a system that says, yeah, if I want to buy something, I don't care what it's like, I can go to Target. I mean, I've been getting Target ads about art for your walls, and it makes me want to throw up. If they're aware of art shows, if they've been to art shows, if they want to follow the artists that they saw at art shows, then doesn't the website development, doesn't these kind of virtual online galleries become viable or no?
It's not working. So the only show that I did really well at was the Booth Central show, where it was a very short show. You were online the entire time and people could request to Zoom with you. Because, you know, I sell mostly multi-pieces, groupings. I know I'm going to make a sale when I start moving pieces around and saying, do you like this one with this one? And that's part of, and I can't do that on Eventme. You know, I can put up suggested groupings, and I can put up a thing that says, call me and I'll Zoom with you and pick one out for you. But it's a little different than just having that button that they push to say, hey.
Well, let me ask you this. Do you think that most art show promoters in the years that you've been doing art shows really have a grasp of how to promote their art show? Do they draw in, and specifically, are they drawing in a targeted audience of people that like to buy art versus just people that want to walk through the event? Do you think they do a good job in the physical world of art
They're
shows?
They're drawing based on history.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because they've been in existence for a long period of time.
And, right.
Right.
Yeah.
But as Frank probably knows, when you start doing things like with in the virtual world, and it's true, I think, in the physical world too, when you start doing things like Facebook can allow you to be very targeted in who you try to draw, correct?
Yes.
Yes. And but, I don't, yeah, but.
It's not that easy.
No, it's not.
You know, even with Facebook, that how do you define a target? Well, is an art form in and of itself. You know, the really great advertising agencies are the ones who can help you figure out who you're targeting.
Right.
Exactly. And you know, I've been trying to figure out who I'm targeting as a website designer ever since I started my business. I'm still struggling with it.
Yeah. And is it?
I love you, people in the arts, but you're not rich enough to afford the sites I want to build for you. Now if I can sell two people a week on I'll teach you how to build your site on Weebly. That could be a comfortable living, actually, but I still, I don't know how to do that.
Well, and I think a lot of part of it, what you probably know too, is that a lot of people don't know you exist. So they don't know to turn to you, because most artists, I think if you ask them face to face, they don't know how to do a website, not even close. So if they had somebody that could teach them how to do it and they feel that selling online is viable, that getting a good website design is the first step to getting successful selling your work outside of art shows. And given how many art shows we don't get into that we want to, it would be nice if we could reach an audience, say in Cherry Creek or in Pittsburgh or in any other city you want to say that we can't get into that show very often, But if we can reach the audience there through social media with targeted advertising, we'd have a chance to have our work in front of the public that we don't get a chance to be in front of. Because what we touch physically with the art shows we do in a year is a pinprick on the art buying audience of ours that exists out there. We can't get to most of them. So that is one of the powers that I think virtual offers, if promoted correctly.
But you can spend a fortune on Facebook ads and not sell a thing. You can spend a fortune on Google ads and not sell a thing. I have always felt that the website and the show are mutually reinforcing. You make a relationship at a show, they get the website, if they bookmark it and they come back, if you have their email address and you can email them to look at, there's something new on the website that might be interesting. The fact that they met you at a show, that they've physically seen, the real thing, they have a sense of scale, they have a sense of color. You can then look at the website and say, okay, well, the website is not going to be a perfect reflection because it's a website and I don't know, looking at this picture, whether this is a small picture of a huge thing or a huge picture of a small thing.
Right.
And I can't trust the colors perfectly because my computer screen isn't perfect. They have to have a prior relationship and some measure of trust in you to be able to shop online. I'm amazed at how well people do on Etsy, frankly.
I sold four prints recently to a guy who saw me at Artie Sphere 3 years ago. That's my friend says, even a bad show is good advertising because I've made sales after the show with the website. But it almost always is people who have seen my work before.
Right. So they support each other really well. But if you had to choose, in the last 12 months, you couldn't choose shows. So the website was the only option. And I'm glad that the clients that I helped set up online have sold some stuff. One of them, she definitely, at least one of them, the investment paid off, that she didn't get rich, but she sold more than enough to pay what she paid me. Made a profit on what she hired me to do. And others, I don't know well enough to know how they did. In some, a couple cases, there were people who already had sites and I just helped them make them better and made them better understand how to work on them. And there were only two sites that we started from scratch last spring, which were online. One of them, the woman who we built it for, I think it's a pretty good website. I think it's a pretty fair representation of her work, but she wasn't selling very much at shows either. So then if she doesn't sell 100, it doesn't prove anything.
Have you thought of doing online classes? Like you were talking about, teach people to set up Weebly, do an online class and charge, money per person, and you can...
Doing it as a group thing, I have not thought of.
Much as a group thing, but as you present a video of how to do it, and you charge people to see the video.
I have not thought about doing that. I will think about it. What I have found, and again, some of these were artists, some of these were dealers, but I've done 8 or 9 sites this last 12 months where we just did Weebly Zoom sessions, shared screen, and they would log into their website and I would tell them, okay, see that button up on the top right corner, click that. This is how you do it. This piece is, this is a one-off thing. I'll do it for you. I'll log in and just take care of that for you so that you have the secure socket and it's an encrypted site. I'll do that for you. I'll make sure that the site name is done right. And the really technical stuff that you do once and done, I do that for them. And the stuff that's ongoing, I'm sitting and watching them do it and telling them when they're, holding their hand, basically. Every now and then I'll take over the screen and do it for them to show them. But basically I want them doing it so it goes from their hands into their brains. as opposed to me doing it, and they see it and it says that looks easy, and then they do it on their own and they can't. And,
and I really think it has to be done something like that.
What?
Then you offer consulting after your class.
Well, yeah, I mean,
one video and, you know, personal consulting is XYZ number of dollars per hour.
You know, I could do that, yeah.
I know one guy who's doing painting lessons online who is a painter and is doing phenomenally well.
I know there's I met a woman in England on Zoom who's doing the same thing. And she had a free Facebook group where she was giving online art lessons, and now she's got a paid tier where she gives much more in-depth online art lessons, but and they're group lessons. I have done and want to do more of is sort of group critique sessions where there's a dozen people whose websites are, we look at one at a time and we go through what the issues are with each of them so that everybody in the group gets the benefit of seeing somebody else's website critiqued. And if you're too chicken to do it for your own or you don't have one, you still get the benefit of seeing it done for somebody else. And I did it once with Connie Mettler, and we did over a dozen in 2 hours. That was a little too much, but I could do 8 in 90 minutes comfortably. But I haven't figured out, you know, I've contacted a few art groups and offered to do it for free. Haven't one case they just ghosted me. They didn't even say no thank you.
Wow.
So I'm you know trying to figure out who are appropriate organizations to make this offer to.
All the art show promoters.
Yeah. I'm not sure the art show promoters would want all their artists to have better websites.
Well, it depends.
Why not?
Why not? Yeah. Unless they're taking a commission, you know, from what you sell at the art festival, you know, they take their booth fee up front. And if you have more people following you on your website, then those are people that if they're local, they're going to come to the show, then they should want it.
Well, and if your website is a way for people that are interested in you to discover you more and more in depth and more detail, isn't that also what show promoters want from their websites, is to discuss the people that say follow Three Rivers or want to follow the Columbus Arts Festival, to be able to go on there and have a good experience learning what the event is about, learn more about the artists that participate in it, and have it be a stronger, more powerful interaction with potential buyers.
I have no doubt there are promoters who feel exactly like that, and I have no doubt there are promoters who just don't have enough sense to think about it that way.
Yeah, and unfortunately, we pay some of that money for our booth fees, which is... Yeah.
Yes. So... But, you know, if any of you know show promoters who you think would find this appealing, tell them that you know a guy who would be glad to do a free webinar for their artists. I'll be glad to do it.
Well, are there any art organizations starting up, you know, replacing NIA or anything like that, artist groups? I haven't seen one in a long time.
No. Not that I've heard of.
We're getting close to dog feeding time, aren't we?
Yeah.
Yeah.
My wife is in the other room. Hey, they've got to eat.
Oh.
Who's the alpha in this back here? Come on. Well, it's good talking with all of you. I like your ideas. And
it's a good discussion.
Yeah.
Thank you. I'd love to see us talk more about it, because I think the take-home message from the virtual world was that our promoters don't know what they're doing in the virtual world. They just don't. They don't know how to set it up. And we saw such diversity in it. You know, we saw everything from just, hey, here's the website and the zap images of a few, you know, go onto their websites, of which a lot of artists don't even have websites. Some of them have Facebook pages, not websites. And they just said, oh yeah, we've done our job. No, they didn't. And for virtual shows, then the question becomes, can virtual shows succeed if they're done correctly? And if so, if there's a way that promoters can understand why they failed and what needs to be done differently, and for them to develop those relationships, like you're going through, Frank, with the different entities that are involved in a virtual world to solve the problems that may exist there. And again, I think EventMe has demonstrated, and I've actually worked with some of their tech people on some things, to change the way that it works. So if the artist community can interact with promoters that can interact with EventMe to change or any other thing, any like EventMe out there, to make them stronger, that would be ultimately a good option, I think, for us to have alternatives, because we don't know how long this is going to last with COVID. And if one of the downsides of a longer experience is that they're going to cut down on the number of artists and change the footprint, that means it's going to be harder for us to get into a lot of the shows that we've gotten into before. So how do we replace that in our lives? And to the extent that relationships at shows are just that, they're a relationship between the artist and the promoters, I think we need to see what can be conveyed to the...
Well, between the artists and the promoters and your existing customers.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, right. Zoom is a great tool. I don't know how, you know, like I said, Booth Central used it very well, but I don't want to be on, you know, sitting in front of my computer for nine hours a day waiting for somebody to Zoom with me.
Exactly. Maybe, yeah.
I've been thinking of doing a thing where it's like, you know, from 9 to 10 every morning, I'll be here on Zoom and here's how you link to me. But that just sounds like a lot of work for, you know, I spend a lot of time sitting in front of blanks.
Well, a lot of wasted time.
What Allison, what you could do, though, there are programs like Calendly where you can set up time slots and you could get people to pre-book so you would know exactly when they were going to be there. You wouldn't be sitting around waiting.
What's the name of that code?
Calendly, C-L-A-N-D-L-Y. And I don't know whether it's calend.ly or what. I haven't gotten to that program yet. But there are several different kinds of similar programs. So it's not the only one where it's basically... You have an online calendar and people can slot themselves in and you know exactly when they're going to show up.
I like that.
And that, I think, is something that would make a great deal of sense for any online show where there's a Zoom component.
Yeah, and see, that would be, again, as part of the education, operation with the show promoters, if we could let them know that that's available, like you just told us, and maybe we could send them to you to say, hey, talk to Frank, because he's got some resources that you could use that would help during that time period. And the artist would love that because, like you're saying, Allison, you don't want to sit in front of your computer all day, both days of an art show that's online, waiting to hope that somebody might possibly want to contact you. They could schedule it. And that would be absolutely wonderful. That would be a way over that obstacle.
I like that idea.
And you know, so if you had a week-long show, and people on the first day can start setting up calendar meetings with people, with the artists at the show over the rest of the week. It wouldn't work on a one-day show, I don't think, or even a two-day. But
I'm thinking of just putting in, you know, a single date from, like I said, a 9 to 10 slot for Monday through Friday. Because I didn't get, you know, I only got one person on Zoom through Booth Central. Mm-hmm. But it was a much easier sale because I could show them pictures and she built a grouping just because I can share my screen and build a grouping for her in Photoshop.
Would it work?
Even if I just get one a week.
Well, would it work then if they saw you in an art show, virtual art show that was, say, a two-day show, that they could contact you anytime thereafter to schedule a Zoom meeting to actually see it?
And just have an hour a day slot, you know, because I don't think you're going to fill, you know, 8 hours a day with slots. I'm going to say you could have 9 o'clock on the 22nd and somebody else could have 9 o'clock on the 23rd. And if it gets more, then set up more slots, but you know,
I've got other things I need to do.
As long as, you know.
Poor Larry's saying, I got to feed the dogs.
Yeah.
Well, we can resume this next week.
Yeah.
Have a topic. Larry, maybe in your next email, we put this as, you know, Zoom, using Zoom and calendars for art consultations.
I'm going to check this out because if I can get somebody on Zoom, I can usually make it sale.
Yeah. Let's keep this. Yeah, it's a great thread. So if we can carry it on, that would be wonderful.
Okay. Well,
everybody, bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Get eaten by the pack. Stay strong, Larry.
Bye.
You're the alpha. Remember, tell them that.